This is Inside Wealth, the ultimate disclosure on Talk 910 KNEW. Living a healthy and happy life is about awakening to matters of your wallet balanced by concerns of your heart. Now, Stu Zimmerman.
Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome back to Inside Wealth, where we talk about the kind of wealth that money alone just can't buy, where it's truly a joy to be alive. So inside that skin and bones and bag of chemicals that you call yourself, or maybe you don't call yourself that, but that's kind of what your exterior is, that inside that, as the French would say, that je ne sais quoi, you know, that what makes you uniquely you. The program here is really about how we can enjoy and feel so rich on the inside, whatever we could ascribe to millions and millions of dollars and never having a financial care ever again, but feel that on the inside, whether it's, you know, showing up in our relationships, the appreciation of a good meal, going out into nature, or just being grateful that at this very moment, as you're listening to this program right here, right now, that it is truly a blessing simply to be alive. That's Inside Wealth. With us today, we have a fantastic program, as always. I get to say that in all humility. Marilyn Schlitz, PhD, based up in the Petaluma area, is joining us, and she's the Vice President of Research and Education at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Has wrote a fabulous book, co-authored with Cassandra Wheaton and Tina Amarok, called Living Deeply, The Art and Science of Transformation in Everyday Life. Needless to say, you know, as another Zimmerman once said a generation ago, these times, they are a-changing. So transformation, whether we like it or not, is just part of a given these days. And how can we live a life that's more meaningful and richer for all of us? Stay tuned for Marilyn. We also have our resident Brain Trust member, George McCown. George is such a brilliant guy. If you haven't heard him before, come back to our website at insidewealth.net. And we had a feature interview with him, and he's made many contributions to the Brain Trust segment. He manages billions of dollars at McCown DeLew. It's a private equity firm. He was the chairman, now chairman emeritus of the World Business Academy, and is also now chairman of Outward Bound. He's got great insights. He's on the board of board of supervisors at the Hoover Institution. That's a think tank out of Stanford University, and, you know, kind of conservative thought. But before we get to George, who's a great thinker and a big heart, as well as Marilyn, you get this week's Bowl of Stew. Well, you know, we're staying with this theme here of having this 1 month to live, because if you haven't heard the shows recently, we're T-minus three and counting. Our last show is going to be on June 29th, at least on KNEW, and we will survive on InsideWealth.net. For the foreseeable future, that's insidewealth.net. And as I immerse myself in this 1 month to live and doing it through the radio show, you know, one thing comes to mind. I lose my fear around money. And I know the circumstances right now are very uncomfortable for a lot of people, and maybe you're one of them. And frankly, if we keep our eyes open and take a candid assessment of where we are in the world right now, the odds highly favor them getting worse before they get better. And the truth is, clearly nobody has the crystal ball here to know how bad they could possibly get. We've had other guests on the program before, including George McCown, who has met with people like the Undersecretary of Treasury and other people to get the inside scoop. And it is potentially very scary. I'm not saying this to instill fear. What I am saying is, let's just keep our eyes open. And what I can say as I go through this exercise of 1 month to live, the fear of running out of money, you know, during my lifetime goes away. Where I have a deep sense of knowing that whatever it takes to have the money in, to put food on the table, a roof over the head, and clothes on my back, will occur. Now, clearly, homeless people can't quite say that. And that's actually part of the transformational shift that is occurring and will occur as we go forward. Because whether it was the Great Depression or other times of significant economic contraction, what winds up happening is people come closer together. They tighten their belts. You know, they go by with a little bit less. They scale back their expectations on the material side of things and come to a place of greater and deeper foundation of what really is important, a new sense of priorities. Or maybe it was the old sense that we just kind of forgot along the way. In terms of no matter what, it really is a blessing to be alive. No matter how difficult or dire the circumstances may look on the outside, there's no need for us to go to a place of fear, because we can spend our whole lives there. And you know, fear has a way of compounding upon itself. Conversely, so does peace. And so does love. So as I go through the exercise of having 1 month to live, I'm just finding that, you know, whatever money there is in a given moment, so long as there's food on the table, shelter over my head, relationships I care about, a form of physical well-being so I can actually enjoy the moment being in the body, is a deep wealth there. A deep wealth there. And it makes the money just gravy on top. Joining us in studio today is Marilyn Schlitz, PhD, a scientist, an anthropologist, and she has so much of a deep background in science and observing us humans out here, you know, because believe it or not, it really is in many ways still a mystery. And as much as we may think we have all the answers, do we really? Do we even think that we really do? And anyway, Marilyn has some great evidence and wrote a fantastic book called Living Deeply, The Art and Science of Transformation in Everyday Life. And really, this is very much an inside wealth. It is so much about living deeply. That's a fantastic book. She's also the VP of Research and Education over at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which is in our own backyard here in Nevada or Petaluma, depending upon which way you're looking at it. And it's a magnificent campus. If you've never been, I highly recommend you go check it out. Anyway, she's got a whole litany of background, but let's get right into it with Marilyn right here. So Marilyn, first of all, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
Great. You know, you've accomplished so much. Before we get into the details of living deeply, how do you define success?
Oh, good question. Success is defined in an integral way. I think there's that sense of success that my body is regulating itself in harmony. It's the success that comes when my mind and body are coordinated and in some kind of synchronous complementarity. It's my interpersonal relationships. It's the relationship with my son, with my coworkers, with the environment, and ultimately with that sense of something bigger, that sense of the sacred.
Mm. So it sounds like it's very much a state of being.
It's a state of being. It's a state of doing. I think it's a state of wholeness. So for me, success can be defined as, you know, specific outcomes when I accomplish a goal that I've intended to accomplish. That feels like success. But there's also success in recognizing that a failure is a gift. And so being able to see success as something that is any opportunity to learn and expand ourselves.
Well, it's very clear that you are extremely successful, mm-hmm. and you continue to, by your own definition especially, which ultimately is all that really counts, right? And I want to take a look at this book of Living Deeply.
Great.
And what that really is, because there's a lot of talk about transformation these days. Obviously, Oprah and Eckhart Tolle have done incredible work together in reaching out to the masses with their brand. I'm not sure if it's a brand of transformation or not, but a pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you share in terms of defining transformation for us and what living deeply is?
Mm. Well, change is clearly in the air, and we saw it in the recent success of the Obama campaign to get the Democratic nomination. That's an example of how change is appealing to us. We've always been surrounded and enveloped in change. You know, we grow older, we see ourselves develop in different ways. So it's not like change is new right now. What's new in the air, I think, is an invitation to bring change into our lives, into our relationships, into our society, into our interactions with one another. And I think that what is unique about the moment is that there's a dissatisfaction. There's a sense that something's broken. You can feel this everywhere. You can feel it amongst teachers. You know, we're 17th in terms of academic aptitude of the industrialized nations. You can see it in the context of healthcare workers that are struggling to create a healing system under the most adverse circumstances. You see it in the context of workers trying to find a meaningful way of engaging in their livelihood. We're all hungry for change. And so we were interested in not so much those little incremental changes that, you know, are kind of course corrections, but really the kind of fundamental shifts in our consciousness that allow us to begin to experience reality in a different way. So these kinds of transformations in consciousness are something that has been of great interest to us over the 10 years that we've been doing research, and really trying to think about what it is that triggers people to have a fundamental transformation in their perceptions of their self and of their relationships to each other and into the world. So we define these transformations of consciousness as fundamental shifts in our perspective of who we are and what we're capable of becoming.
And so how did this notion of living deeply even come about for you?
Well, I've been interested in transformation and consciousness for a long time, but about 10 years ago, I was at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and the Institute, first of all, was founded out of the vision of transformation. Edgar Mitchell, one of the Apollo 14 astronauts, had the opportunity to be the pilot of the little lunar module from the Apollo capsule to the moon and back. And so his part of the mission was complete, and he describes having the window seat on the way home. And it was from this vantage point of deep space, looking out at planet Earth suspended in the vastness of this void. And he had two experiences. One was profound pain. It was a deep suffering that came when he realized the kinds of problems we face as a civilization on planet Earth, the kind of divisions of race or gender or ethnicity or tribalism, whatever they happen to be, are almost entirely constructions of our worldview. And that, in fact, it's our consciousness that has brought about much of the difficulty we face. Mm. And then at the same time as he was experiencing that kind of opening that came through pain was a revelation of unity and that sense of interconnectedness. And so here he was, an MIT-trained engineer who really believed strongly in the Newtonian paradigm of cause and effect, you know, enough that he got into the Apollo 14 capsule, and anybody who saw Apollo 13 knows that had to have been scary. So he came back to planet Earth with the idea that perhaps in the same way we rallied the collective intention to explore outer space, you know, the Apollo program being a model of that, maybe the next big breakthrough will come from that same concerted, focused intention to explore inner space and really understand the nature of how we tick and what motivates us. So I then cut to about 10 years ago, and I was approached by a very successful businessman, a non-New Agey, non-woo-woo kind of guy in any way, shape, or form. And he had had a transformational experience. Didn't require going to the moon. It required stepping out onto a deck at a retreat center, the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California, and suddenly seeing the world in a new way. And instead of visioning or experiencing himself as separate from the world, he really began to see the wholeness. And in that moment, primed by a lot of smaller experiences, but in that moment, he had a fundamental shift in his perspective. And so he was interested in knowing, was there something weird about him? And if not, is this something that we could learn more about in order to invite other people to experience these kinds of transformations that ultimately led him to be a happier, healthier, more whole person, to be more successful in the language that you were using before?
And that is, in fact, the purpose of this program. And Marilyn, stay with us for more so we can all get a sense of how to transform our lives to live more deeply, authentically, and more fulfillingly. Be right back. We'll have more Inside Wealth right here on Talk Radio 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. A business, a mission, and a message. Inside Wealth can deliver that message to an intelligent, insightful, and mindful audience. Being a sponsor on Inside Wealth, you become an important player in a win-win agreement where nobody has to lose. Invest in your business and your purpose by calling 707-425-2360 or go to InsideWealth.net and sponsor radio that makes a difference. Inside Wealth, the greatest show on earth.
Imagine, you're lying in your bed stranded because you can't walk. Your friends and family go about their day, but you're left behind. You can't move without dragging your lifeless legs across the ground, stumbling every step, struggling to carry the entire weight of your body on two arms. This is reality for more than 100 million children and adults worldwide. They simply can't afford the one thing that will change everything, a wheelchair. We're the Wheelchair Foundation. We deliver hope, mobility, and freedom to impoverished people across the globe. And now you can be part of this great mission. A small gift from you can buy a brand new wheelchair and set a suffering person free. You won't believe how little it takes. Transform a life instantly. To make a donation or to find out how you can help, call the Wheelchair Foundation.
Call toll free. 888-378-3839. 888-378-3839.
Are you looking to help give back to the community but need great flexibility? Tony La Russa's Animal Rescue Foundation, ARF, has a flexible volunteer position tailored just for you. You can share in the triumph of helping an orphan kitten or puppy. ARF needs volunteer fosters to provide a little extra time or attention until these animals can be adopted into their forever homes. ARF will provide the food, medication, and support, and you provide the love. Check out ARF.net or call 925-256-1-ARF today.
Today, the fastest route to career success is a college degree. And today, the fastest route to your college degree is via the internet at University of Phoenix Online. Designed for working adults, University of Phoenix Online lets you earn your degree when and where you want without interrupting your job or your personal life. At University of Phoenix Online, you'll learn from industry leaders. You'll study with other motivated adults, and you'll complete real-world projects that can help you excel at your current job. Best of all, you can earn your degree in just 2 to 3 years with over 30 degree programs to choose from. Don't wait any longer to start earning your bachelor's or master's degree now. To learn more, call University of Phoenix Online at 877-286-1404. That's 877-286-1404. A better future is as close as your computer. Call today, 877-286-1404. That's 877-286-1404.
We're here in studio with Marilyn Schlitz, PhD, who's truly a scholar and not just a bright mind and scientist, but also a huge heart. She's focused on transformation and living a life of just absolute authenticity and exploring the inner space as well as the outer space. And her most recent book called Living Deeply, The Art and Science of Transformation in Everyday Life, that she wrote with Cassandra Vieten and Tina Amarok, is a marvelous one. I want to drill down on it a little bit because you spoke to some amazing people to compile this book. People like Ram Dass and Jerry Jampolsky and Houston Smith and George Leonard and Angelus Arian, all these amazing people. How are you able, first of all, to get their attention in this?
Well, one of the advantages of having been in the field for a long time and working in an organization that has really championed these kinds of ideas is that, you know, we're a community and community supports community. One of the things that, you know, we did a 10-year research program and it consisted of a set of steps. The first, after Richard Gunther had come to me to describe his own transformational experience, we began to look into the medical and scientific literatures about transformation, the kind of experience he reported. And almost entirely, it was considered to be pathological. It was psychotic or delusional or in some way dysfunctional. And yet when you listen to Dick Gunther's story about how it had improved and imbued his life with greater meaning and depth, that certainly didn't sound pathological to us. So we began to kind of collect stories from people about their own transformational journey and collected hundreds of people's experiences of how they had undergone a kind of consciousness transformation. We then convened three focus groups, and the focus groups were made up of leaders of transformational training programs, largely in the Bay Area. Some people came from further. And one of the things we saw is that even these leaders were hungry and eager to have community, to talk about these kind of concepts that they'd been exploring in their work, but really hadn't brought that lens of science to, you know, discriminate and begin to calibrate some of what they were observing in their practices. We then went into depth, and that's the basis of this Living Deeply book, is interviews with 60 masters from different world traditions. So some of the people you mentioned are the more famous ones. It's, you know, the many who you've never heard of that also enrich and deepen our understanding. And so what we did is to convene, you know, two-hour interview sessions with each of these masters and to look from their different traditions at, you know, the differences between their practices, for example, as well as the commonalities and what were the threads or the perennial aspects across these different traditions that might shed light for each of us about how we can invite change into our lives, how we can really maintain and sustain the kinds of intentions. You know, we all make New Year's resolutions, like almost everybody makes a New Year's resolution, and almost all of those people forget what the resolution was by the end of January. You know, sometimes that adage about the road to hell is paved with good intention. How do you begin to really shift those intentions into meaningful, sustainable actions in your life? And so that was what we were trying to get at from these different teachers, is not only what triggers these kinds of changes in transformations of consciousness, but how do you live a practice? What are the qualities when you talk to a Catholic priest and a pagan witch and a, you know, Buddhist Roshi and a Islamic imam? Obviously, their practices look very different. And yet what we were able to find in the course of the research was that they shared some fundamental qualities in common. And so we began to understand and define what constitutes a transformational practice. It was intention, bringing my intention to change, taking the pain or the suffering or the joy and the opportunities of my life and growing into those, bringing my intention to it. It's where I put my attention. Many of the transformational practices are really about cultivating capacities to either focus our attention in new ways or to expand our attention so that we begin to recognize that oftentimes we wear blinders and our culture gives us blinders, particularly if you grow up in a culture that only emphasizes the material, physical aspects of reality. What about those things inside us that give us the most meaning and purpose? The third aspect that these different practices had in common was repetition. And again, building on what we know from the neurosciences, we know that our brains lay down patterns as a result of our habitual behaviors. Well, if those are dysfunctional behaviors, then our brain begins to reinforce those behaviors and we do them more and more. These kinds of transformations in consciousness invite us to build new habits, habits that ultimately invite us to greater happiness, greater wholeness, greater sense of contentment, invite in gratitude and forgiveness and compassion, some of these kinds of qualities. And then the fourth aspect of practice that they had in common was some kind of guidance. Many of the people emphasized how important it is to have a teacher. In the same way, if you are doing weight training and you want to develop a particular muscle group, it helps to have a coach. Well, people talked about these spiritual teachers in the same way. But it was also important to distinguish that guidance can come not only from outside, that external authority who's going to tell me how to live my life, But one of the beauties of these different practices is that it invites you to find a place of quiet and silence and inner authority such that you become your own guide to your own transformational journey. And so all of those four qualities, you know, wrapped in the arms of surrender, become sort of the elements of what each of us can bring to any practice, from driving to work in the morning to tending our rose garden. How do those become opportunities for transformation?
We're here with Marilyn Schlitz, who's giving us a breakdown on how to go about transformation, or what the various transformational practices are that they all have in common. Some of them we could call them religions in some cases, but they all drill down into things in common. So whether we have a particular religious belief, or we're more of a free agent and not on one particular team that we've identified with a particular religion, this is what they all have in common: intention, attention, repetition, and guidance. And that guidance now comes not only from the outer form with coaches, but internally, and which is also really empowering. And you mentioned specifically, you know, wrapped around surrender, which I'm not sure if surrender has gotten a bad rap in our culture, because that's typically the loser waves the red flag and surrenders, which, and we all like to be winners, you know. So how do you define surrender here? Because obviously Jesus the Christ talks about surrender. It's one of those things that is certainly easier said than done.
Well, the transformational teachers that we interviewed, and we also conducted surveys with almost 2,000 people now. And so, you know, the kind of qualities that they speak of are the capacity to hold paradox. And so on the one hand, we have this effortful striving, which we call intention. We bring our will and our sort of volition to accomplishing goals in the world. And, you know, oftentimes we set out with a goal and then we can be disappointed if we didn't get to exactly where we aimed for. In this holding of paradox, you also see that success is defined by our capacity to live into what emerges. So you can direct your intention, and then at some point you need to yield to the form it's going to take. And it may take a form that's very different than what you saw at the beginning. So I think that oftentimes these teachers from these different traditions, and even these emergent new forms of transformational practice like holotropic breath work or the fourfold way, you know, there are a variety of different kind of emergent forms. In all of them, there are skills for holding the multiplicity of different perspectives that people hold. So a capacity to develop what we call worldview literacy, the recognition that we see the world through a lens, and that lens is our worldview, and that we're not the only ones who have a worldview, and that in fact there are lots of differences. So part of transformation in terms of outcome is our capacity to begin to sit with difference in worldview. And then it's this capacity to hold the paradox between setting intention and ultimately yielding to whatever form it's going to take. And people talk about how important, after a transformational experience, it is to begin to surrender into the goodness of life in whatever form it takes for any of us.
Well, thank you, Marilyn. Actually, my team and I have been undergoing a bit of a visioning for where we're taking our organization and frankly our lives, because there's really no separation on a profound level.
That's what we're all doing, aren't
exactly
we?
Yeah. with Michael Beckwith. Uh-huh. and his life visioning tapes, and his description of surrender really spoke to me, and he used the word yielding very specifically, but in his case he described it as yielding to excellence. Mm-hmm. And just letting go into our the best of what we have that we could possibly be as human beings. Mm. And let go into that. Mm. And that's a surrender, because frequently it does require a few limiting beliefs that are shed by the wayside.
And there's so many opportunities to begin to live into this. You can think about, you know, the mundane aspects. So, you know, people say, okay, right, you know, the lama who goes off and lives in a cave for 10 years becomes a good meditator. And, you know, I can't give up my life in order to go do that. What we argue in this book is that you don't need to. It's really because the way we're defining transformation is a shift in perspective. You can bring it to any aspect of your life experience. So, you know, I like to talk about road rage as a spiritual practice, where instead of, you know, evoking a very defensive, hostile, aggressive kind of response to somebody who cuts you off, if you can come from a position of compassion, it radically changes not that person's behavior, but your own response to it, your own physiological response. You know, I was driving down the street and there was this lady who was blocking all the traffic. She had a dog in one hand, a dog carrier in the other, and she was weaving in and out of traffic. And I was taking my son off to violin lesson and we were late. And I was, you know, like, what is wrong with this woman? And all of a sudden, I kind of got into the insight that I'd gotten from being with all these masters and thinking, you know, here's an opportunity to practice a little something. And I thought, you know, perhaps something is really wrong with her. And as soon as I shifted from aggression and hostility to compassion and appreciation, it shifted my whole reactivity in my body. And I was able to slow down, give her time to pass. And ultimately, we were a few minutes late, but so was the teacher, and it all worked out. So, you know, these are little things. You can get into situations with an argumentative coworker and begin to see it from a different perspective where you're less reactive. You know, there's lots of opportunities to bring these insights into every aspect of, you know, every part of our life.
We're here with Marilyn Schlitz, who is the VP of Research and Education over at the Institute of Noetic Sciences up in the Nevada, Petaluma area, and also a co-author of a fantastic book called Living Deeply, The Art and Science of Transformation in Everyday Life. And that really is a takeaway here, is that transformation, one, on some level, it's inevitable because it's simply nothing more than change. And it can occur in everyday life, so we don't have to do the llama thing in the cave and levitate and do that in order to have meaningful, deep transformation in our lives, right?
And you're just— That's right. And I think there are things we can do to invite it in. You know, taking even 10 minutes to be quiet doesn't mean you have to practice a particular kind of meditation. But as you begin to shift to that inner authority, it helps to develop some practices or time in the day when you can reflect and integrate a lot of the complexities of what we're dealing with as we're bombarded by, you know, these weapons of mass distraction on a routine basis.
I love that. Perfect, perfect. Weapons of mass distraction.
You know, and we're all facing it. And I think that it is a time of acceleration. It's a time that is enormously demanding on us as, you know, we have the convergence of all the insights and accomplishments of science and technology coming together with the, you know, vast array of different kinds of spiritual and religious practices. And in the midst of racing from one thing to another, I think we're all called to meaning. You know, we are meaning-making creatures. And I think that taking the time to center ourselves and, you know, to live into some of the insights that these different teachers offer, I think it can really help us. The other thing we did is to create a DVD, and it's also called Living Deeply, Transformational Practices from the World's Wisdom Traditions. And it's 9 practices from different world traditions that allow you in the course of 8 or 9 minutes to experience a little something from the Himalayan yogic tradition of Swami Veda, or from a zikr of an Islamic Sufi practitioner, or a loving kindness meditation from Sylvia Borstein, a Buddhist practitioner. We do a Eucharist ritual with Father Tiso, a Catholic priest. So there's an array of different kinds of practices. And the reason we did this is to offer people the opportunity to bring it into their home and to learn a little something about different tools that you can use to begin to facilitate and cultivate this kind of transformation in your life.
And we can get that DVD through the Noetic Sciences or through you
and
personally?
Through Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble has it, and you just have to ask for it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. You know, time is rapidly coming to a close here, Marilyn. Thank you so much for sharing with us. I've got one final question here. What is your vision for what our world could be?
Well, the project I'm most excited about right now is what we're calling worldview literacy, and it's translating the insights that came from this work on consciousness transformation for the K-12 public school system, and then ultimately taking that out to the national school system, and ultimately, you know, the potential of working with— I was just giving a lecture at the United Nations a couple weeks ago, working with their cyberspace program to take these kinds of tools for how it is that we can navigate change, how we can hold complexity, how we can see through other people's lens of perception about what is meaningful and important to them. So I think there's a variety of skill sets that go into worldview literacy, including, you know, our capacity to think in a way that is holding of those complexities. And so my vision is that we take this out to the kids of the world, and ultimately we begin to shift how we get along with each other and to invite more respect and appreciation into our everyday lives.
Marilyn, thank you so much for joining us. You're great.
Thank you.
We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW, 910 AM, San Francisco. Will, ownership, trust, appreciation. They all work in the financial world, and they are all keys to security and wealth beyond measure. And it's all in our book, Inner Security and Infinite Wealth, subtitled Merging Self-Worth and Net Worth. Hey there, it's me, Stu Zimmerman. Come to our website at insidewealth.net. That's insidewealth.net, and order your copy today. That's insidewealth.net. We're blowing the doors wide open on Inside Wealth right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. And now it's time for our Brain Trust segment. And with us today is George McCown, who's the founding member of McCown DeLew. It's a private equity investment firm. He's also the chairman of the World Business Academy and Outward Bound USA. And George, what are you seeing out there? What's on your mind today?
Well, other than the economy, which I think is on everybody's minds, I'm continued to be dismayed at the seeming inability of various levels of our government to really function very well and to respond to the kinds of challenges that we're seeing, particularly in our both economic and social circumstances today.
So why don't you be a little specific here in terms of who's not responsive at what levels of government, and also what issues?
It goes all the way from the stuff that we do and don't do in our foreign policy to the things that don't get done at the local and community levels by government, in part because government seems to always be out of money for the things that are important. But the thing that is so astounding today is the proliferation of social entrepreneurship, of NGOs, of private foundations, of people that are stepping up to the plate with funding from their own pocketbooks to support all kinds of things that need to be done in our society. It's just, it's amazing and it's gratifying. I was talking to a fellow at Stanford the other day who runs the development office, the fundraising office, and he said they can't keep their better fundraisers on staff because they're being poached by all these new foundations that are springing up, that are out there trying to do things. I know in the group of folks that I see once a month in the World President's Organization, I think virtually everybody in my forum there has, over the last several years, set up some form of family foundation. And they have very specific things they're interested in doing, from accelerating the speed with which clinical trials actually, or discoveries in medicine get into clinical trial and therefore into the marketplace, to in the case of foreign policy, the extraordinary work that we're doing with Greg Mortensen, the fellow who wrote the book Three Cups of Tea, who's building the schools along the border regions of Pakistan and Afghanistan that my wife and I have been involved with for the last 15 years. They're doing things that the government does not seem to be able to do effectively, or if they do, it's at extremely high cost. And I'm just become a great fan of, if you will, grassroots citizens activity. So that's very much what's on my mind. It's dismay over the inability of the government to do a lot of the things that it really needs to do in our society, and the rapidity with which people are stepping up on their own with their own money and raising money from others to get things done. It's terrific.
Well, that's great to hear, and it sounds like all of the social ills are somehow being addressed in one form or another.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
what would you say?
Well, we have a tremendous number of social ills. I mean, it's sort of a transcendental problem. It goes back to Willis Harmon's seminal book, Global Mind Change. We are in fact in a period where well, very much like the scientific revolution 300-400 years ago, where the world is in the process of changing its mind about what's true and what's acceptable. And many institutions that have had support historically are finding they don't have the support like they used to have. People are withdrawing support from many of the venerable institutions that have been a big part of our society and creating new ones, whether they be grassroots or whatever. And people are becoming less reliant on government to do what individuals seem to find they can do better for themselves, not usually in isolation, but with other groups of people. So it's all about, we're changing our mind about the source of authority and the source of authenticity in our society, not only in the United States, but around the world.
And that actually sounds like evolution to me.
Well, hopefully it is evolution. Hopefully it is. I know Willis's view was that consciousness is causal, that consciousness exists, and what we are doing is discovering it as opposed to creating it. And
yes.
I happen to subscribe to that view, and I think we are, as we evolve and experiment and fail in many of the things we try to do otherwise, we find new ways to do things which lead us into a new kind of an enlightenment, if you will, about what's possible and what needs to be done. And it's very much staying connected. It goes back to the perennial wisdom. And the perennial wisdom is that all of us have within us a spark of divinity, that spark of divinity is from the same source. Therefore, we are all connected to each other, and that our task in life is to rediscover that fact and reunite with the source. And that piece of perennial wisdom, which, of course, goes through all the world's great religions and philosophical traditions, is the bedrock for, I believe, what is beginning to happen in the world today.
George, it's so great to hear that from a Republican.
That's true. Republicans, they're people too.
George, God bless you, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Stu.
You know, I just love George McCown. I really do. He's got such a measured wisdom about him. Clearly, we were talking about living deeply with Marilyn. He's thinking deeply with George, because he really does drill down, you know, and go beyond the surface to go even deeper into, you know, what really is meaningful and what really is going on. And I think we do all know how often there is this major pull going on, this tug going on, even a conflict, call it that, between what's in it for me and what's in it for us. You know, and maybe that's the ultimate thing why so many of us get so confused about this whole notion of patriotism, for example. Because patriotism is supposed to be what's in it for us, is it not? But so often, it's really about what's in it for me in terms of the power grab or being in control or, dare I say, providing a conduit for cronies to make money. Or whatever you want to call it. But we all know that there is that push and pull that just doesn't feel good. And it's hard to really know anymore. And the same thing holds true in business. You know, a business is really providing us a service that we really want, or they're just shoving stuff down our throat, you know, to keep their doors open. And to, you know, pad the executives with additional options, warrants, stock, and bonuses that far exceed the rest of the workers. It's hard to even know anymore. So that brings us back to Marilyn. Why not live deeply? And she had an incredible, detailed, and very pragmatic approach to transformation for everyday life, the art and science thereof, where she talks about intention and attention, and whatever you focus on expands. Repetition, because let's face it, you know, we got a lot of bad habits out there, or whether they're bad or good, we have a lot of habits out there. And frankly, a lot of them are stories that play in our mind. You could call them limiting beliefs. You know, the that's the way it is story, the you can't fight City Hall story, it's too good to be true story, money doesn't grow on trees story, I'm not lovable story, or I'm not smart enough story. There's a lot of stories out there. And it takes repetition and discipline to place your intention and attention in a new direction. And finally, guidance, which can come from the outside with a coach or potentially a psychologist even, or somebody in, you know, in the metaphysical community, or even somebody at your church or your temple or whatever. And it can also come from within. Because ultimately, are we not all made of the same stuff? And whatever is that created everything, if you want to call it that, created you too. Not just the band. You, comma, too. And so to that extent, you have as much access to inner guidance as the Dalai Lama does. You have as much inner guidance as, you name it, Joel Osteen, anybody who you would consider to be, you know, really, or even Deepak Chopra. You have exactly as much access to inner guidance as they do. But you can certainly figure out one thing here, right? All those other guys, and there are women also, including Marilyn Schlitz and Marianne Williamson and a host of others, so it's not just a men's game. You got to figure they spent a lot of time on intention, attention, and what they focus on expands. So they, all of them have had the intention of being closer to all that is, to being of service to humanity, to living a joyful life. They've all had that same intention. They have all placed significant attention in that area, and what they focus on does expand. And you know they are very disciplined in repetition, whether you call it prayer, or you call it meditation, or visualization. It goes by a lot of names, but you know they spend a lot of time doing that. It seems to work for them. So maybe it could work for you too. And that is one of the things that if we come full circle and even mix into this mix here, the bowl of stew, where it talks about, we talked about going beyond the fear as it relates to money. And it really cuts to our core. Because on so many levels, the golden calf is still alive. And really well. I mean, it does seem, if you take a step back, doesn't it look like there's nothing wrong with money? I'm not trying to say that there is. But doesn't it look like money is put on a pedestal? Or all the things that we would love to have in our lives that we've been told is our measure of success requires all this money in order to acquire as something outside of us to prove our worth so that we can be successful. And if there's one thing that America stands for, it's success, right? And it's financial success. Isn't that really what it's about? I mean, you know, we can take a step back and we do know that even though we have a political process, I mean, isn't it true that at least with the more recent leaders, I was going to say regimes, but let's call them leaders. You know, whether it's the Bushes or the Clintons or even prior to that, I think it's safe to say that we all know that big business largely contributes to both of them, and lobbyists and special interest groups, and a lot of the political decisions are typically based on financial reasons. And one would certainly think that if Iraq was in the middle of the desert somewhere, in fact, maybe it is, they just happen to have oil. But if they didn't have the oil, one would think that maybe we would not have cared as much. Maybe we wouldn't have cared as much. And maybe if Darfur were located in the Middle East instead, with all this oil right there and a pipeline and all of that, perhaps we would have cared a lot more. And we would have pounded our chest a lot more about being self-righteous against all the human abuse there. Just maybe, right? Just. So we know on a deep, profound level that our government and a lot of the political decisions, as well as our whole notion of the media and the messaging that they offer us, we know that we're being continually bombarded and pelted consciously and subconsciously with the message that success is denominated in dollars alone, or certainly primarily. And that the media, what they do is, you know, they're excellent at broadcasting fear. Are they not? And when they're not broadcasting fear, for the most part, they're broadcasting some form of eye candy, mind-numbing, superficial, drown out the rest of your mind from what can really be important in life and distill it down to some sort of game of Survivor or some sort of sitcom. Well, in taking a look from the perspective of the one life, 1 month to live, as well as possibly one life to live, we can go there too, but 1 month to live, I'm inviting you to consider to live deeply, to get a practice that works for you, that opens your heart and opens your mind to new possibilities, because transformation is occurring right now as we speak. And frankly, all this economic opportunity that we've had in the 90s with the dot-com and even more recently with the real estate boom, you know, knock, knock, you know, it's gone out the door, at least for the foreseeable future. And so now, more than ever, focus, please, on your inside wealth. Until next week, invest in yourself, your passions, your purpose, and your planet. So we turn the clock to zero, honey. I'll sell the stock. We'll spend all the money. We're starting up a brand new day. Join us again same time next week on Talk 910 KNEW. And be sure to visit our website at InsideWealth.net. Subscribe to our podcast, blog, or learn more about Inside Wealth with Stu Zimmerman. Thanks for listening. Talk 910 KNEW. Starting up a brand new day. Turn the clock to zero, by some rivers wide, we'll swim across me. Starting up a brand new day. It could happen to you, just like it happened to me. You have a business, a mission, and a message. Inside Wealth can deliver that message to an intelligent, insightful, and mindful audience. Being a sponsor on Inside Wealth, you become an important player in a win-win agreement where nobody has to lose. Invest in your business and your purpose by calling 707-425-2360 or go to InsideWealth.net. Inside Wealth, the greatest show on worth.